applicable to the actual initial report as opposed to just the data analysis piece.
Right. I'm saying it's part of the preliminary report.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. That would be very useful.
Yeah. This is Steve Michalis joining the call.
Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
Hi, that's Tom. I'm well.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Jordan.
Looks like we finally got constituency statements from everyone except for the registries, maybe?
They sent something.
Did they?
Last night.
The registries?
The registrars sent
something.
Oh, the registrars, yes.
Yeah, I don't think we have anything from the registries.
Okay, so nothing, okay.
I think everyone else.
Oh, no, wait a bit, the registrars. They sent the statement, yes.
Yeah, Tom sent it.
Tom sent it.
Morning.
Correct. But I believe there's nothing from the registry, so we might ask David about that.
Yeah.
Yes, the registry is exactly. They're sent to Task Force 3.
Okay, so the registries have gotten something done. Just
they're sent to Task Force 3. Jeff did something for Task Force 1, and I think they're the only one outstanding.
Okay, yeah, I think that's correct. So that's promising.
I'm not able to open your file.
I was, Barbara, I was able to, the first email that Tom sent had an attachment without an extension. When I renamed that to a PDF, it works fine.
And then PDF. Better
I wasn't sure what to, that's all right. No, I wasn't sure what to rename it. That works well.
Yeah, the second one, Tom, I didn't come, just got all, I don't know, I just got a bunch of data in my mail screen instead of an attachment.
Yeah.
Sorry to be late.
Did someone else just join as well?
Morning, it's Wendy Southner.
Hi, Wendy. So let me just make sure. We have Kathy, Steve Metallis, Tom Keller, and Wendy Seltzer. Is anyone else on the call other than the administrative personnel?
Wait, Glenn and Barbara?
Yeah, Glenn and Barbara. Both.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Kathy.
I'm embarrassed to be on after Barbara, since she's waking up at such an early time.
Oh, but I had to jump on all of you. I was on a 3 a.m. call.
Wow.
What?
That's terrible.
I'm sorry.
Let me tell you, it's a small price to pay for actually being able to stay in Hawaii. So.
Fair enough.
But apologies from Nicholas.
I'm afraid I still can't open the PDF. So maybe if somebody who is able to open it wants to send it to me.
Yeah, I'll resend it to the list.
Thank you.
Oh, Jordan's file? Good, because I was going to have the same question.
My file's actually, I've sent it to you, Kathy, in the best ways I know how. Has anyone else been able to open out the attachment I sent out this morning?
Yes.
Yeah, yours, I've been
able to open.
Okay.
Okay, what, how many files is it, Jordan?
It's just one.
Just one, and what's the format?
It's a Word document.
Word, okay, because I'm having trouble. I'll go back with that information and try it again.
Sure.
Thank you.
Give.
There are apologies from Nicholas Lagergren.
Okay.
But since Steve is on the phone, there is an IP representative.
Right, but we're still missing business, registries, and
ISPs.
And Amadeo.
Oh, and Amadea. So we'll give them another minute or two. We're missing enough people at this point. I'd And I actually want to start talking about policy, so I want to try to have as many people here as possible for that dialogue.
Can we talk about schedule, too?
We can, indeed. Actually, first of all, let me just resend Thomas.
David Moffert joining.
Hi, David. David, I'm going to immediately put you on the spot and ask you where the registry constituency statement is, since it's the only one we're missing.
I'm embarrassed to say it's still in the mill. I'll have to pursue that. I don't know the status at this point.
Okay. So there's an unknown status at this point from our perspective. I'm going to give... I'm resending the registrar statement. Since I'm no good at multitasking, I'm going to do that before we start talking. Okay, I've just resent that file, so hopefully that will work better for people.
You just resent your file?
No, I just resent Tom's file.
Okay, could you resend your file, because I'm still having trouble opening it.
Yeah, let me...
It's not coming through as a Word document for some reason.
Okay, I just sent that straight to you.
Thank you.
Okay, well, almost 10 minutes into this, so I'm going to start some dialogue. In terms of an agenda, I wanted to briefly discuss the data analysis process, which I think we're just about done with. And I actually have been the culprit in holding it up. Secondly, to have a general discussion of schedule and process from this point out. And then third, to start some initial dialogue on, in terms of the policy, some thoughts that we might have on policies at this point now that we've seen all but one of the constituency statements. I recognize that some of we've not seen all of them for particularly long periods of time, so we're not looking for conclusions, but I'd like to at least start the dialogue today because we don't have a huge amount of time, actually, despite the respite the council's given us to get this done. Does anyone else have any modifications or additions they'd like to make to the agenda?
Hi, this is Maggie Mansorkia.
Hi, Maggie. Welcome.
I'm sorry I'm late.
It's okay. We're just getting started right now.
Okay,
so,
great.
If everyone's fine with that agenda, then we're going to jump into brief discussion of the data analysis. I think we've now seen all of the team contributions, although Team 2, which I was responsible for putting together, just barely came to the list this morning. I've also just about completed, I'm just trying to figure out what to do with Team 1's huge spreadsheet and trying to put it into a format that's going to harmonize well with all the text elements from the other teams.
Team 1 also had a text file.
Yeah, no, I know. But the problem is that it's been difficult to... If the idea of the consolidation is to come up with a unified document that has all the data in it somehow, it's just hard to integrate the spreadsheet and all the text elements. So
Maybe it has two parts, a spreadsheet.
It might. I think I may have figured out a way to do it, but we'll have to see. But in any case, I'm going to try to get a draft of that out to the other consolidation people hopefully later today.
Hi, it's Marilyn Page.
Hi, Marilyn. Good. We think we have, am I right, Glenn, we have a full house now?
That's right.
Yeah, okay, great. Is there, other
Wait,
than...
We're missing ALA, ALEC, right?
No, we have Wendy.
Oh, Wendy, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So the only remaining thing to do, I guess, would be to add for the consolidation team to add any text to introduce or to sort of tie all the pieces together. I haven't been really making, I have a very short introduction, haven't been making any attempt to do that. I don't know if it's going to be necessary or not, because we'll have the full report of the full interim report out in the not-too-distant future that will presumably have a lot of that accompanying text, so I would probably not spend a lot of time with it. But we should be able to wrap that process up, I think, very soon. Does anyone, we've now seen the submissions from all of the data analysis teams. Does anyone have any problems with the content that they've seen so far from a, now that we're looking at it from a task force perspective?
I still haven't seen, Kathy, I still haven't seen team.
Right. Okay, well, as soon as you can open up the files, hopefully. Okay, well, we'll just, it sounds like it's a relatively modest amount of work remaining here, so we'll try to wrap that up. So I'm going to jump to our second topic then, which is the...
Before we leave the first topic,
sure.
What will be done with that document? Is that...
That document will be... posted to our list, and I imagine it will become a part of the final, not the final report, the initial report that we make. It's really there as a reference point for people looking in on the work of the group that come to the initial report or the final report and don't want to necessarily have to read every individual submission but want to get some sense of what data was looked at by the group. Any other questions or comments on this topic? Great. So let's jump to the second topic, which is the schedule and process from this point out. We do have, as of today, the constituency statements from all the constituencies and the ALAC except for the registry constituency. Now, I think the council was fairly clear at its last meeting that the April 16th deadline was supposed to be a fairly hard one, and so I'm going to suggest that we simply that David be allowed to advocate on behalf of the registries, and that we would still like to see a constituency statement from the registry constituency, but we can't at this point hold up our policy
Amen.
Development work waiting for additional statements. So that means that for the next few weeks, Glenn, do you know off the top of your head what the date that we're targeting for the initial report is?
6th of May.
The 6th of May.
Yes.
So by the 6th of May, we are supposed to have developed and agreed upon, or at least had a vote upon, that at least the majority of us support, and hopefully a supermajority of us support. And hopefully everyone supports. But that gives us 6th of May is a Thursday, is that correct? So
that's right, it's a Thursday, and there is a council meeting on that day, too.
Okay, so we have essentially 2.5 weeks now in order to devise and agree upon some policy recommendations.
Jordan, I need to ask Glenn a question. So, Glenn, the council call is at what?
The council call is on Thursday, the 6th of May, and it is at 8 a.m. Eastern Time.
That answers my question. I was going to ask whether we would be expected to have it done by then. It doesn't sound like it, Jordan. We would probably need to say... Sorry.
Pardon, I didn't hear last half of what you said, Marilyn.
The reason I asked Glenn what time the council call was, I was just asking whether we would be expected to have our report submitted by then, and probably not if it's 8 a.m. East Coast time.
Yeah, I would imagine perhaps not, but certainly, you know, if we could have it done
right
the evening of the 5th of May, that might be better. But I would imagine that we would be given a little bit of latitude if we were going to finish it later that day.
All right.
But so we do have a fairly, we're back to having a fairly compressed time schedule. But at least we I think at this point, with the data analysis piece wrapping up, we do have a fairly consolidated process from here on out. All we have to do is the really hard stuff with it, which is figuring out some policy recommendations that we all agree upon. So the two remaining pieces, I think, that would make sense to go into the initial report, and others can suggest things that they might like to see done between now and then as well, but Barbara suggested, and I agree, that we have some work done to summarize the constituency statements that have been made as an input to the task force report. And then secondly, obviously, there's the need for policy recommendations as well. So does anyone else have additional components to the initial report they think that we need to get created over the next 2 weeks?
To the initial report?
Yeah.
I think we need to include something under the PDP, something about the comments that were filed to our first public comment period.
Well, the
it's
first
not huge, but
you mean so you mean in the chart, in the comment period to the terms of reference?
Yep. We'd always talked about when that would be part of a report, and I was told it would be our first report, whatever the interim report was.
Yeah, that makes sense. So a summary and inclusion of the public comments. Anyone else? Okay, great. So the policy recommendations, obviously, we will hammer out as a task force over the next couple of weeks. The summary or the concise version of the constituency statements seems like something that I'd like to have the staff do. I don't know how practical that is. Barbara?
It's not that practical this week for me to do that. If there's somebody on the task force who is willing to take it on instead, that would actually be best. But if there isn't anyone who can do it, then I'll do it.
The only thing there's obviously wide degrees of difference of opinion and nuance contained in the constituency statements, and I would be nervous, I guess, about having...
Gordon, it's Marilyn. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
I appreciate that problem. But I think the problem is going to exist for the ICANN as well. Would it be feasible to ask the constituencies provide a... What are we looking for, like an executive summary or a bullet summary of each statement?
Yeah, the problem is I think ideally speaking we would also have like something the staff's done in the past is created like a chart.
Yeah, sort of compare them to each other. I understand what you're asking for. I have two other projects that have to be done this week. That's the only reason that I... hesitate to take it on.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, I think that, I don't think it's strictly required. I mean, it's useful as a conversational tool to be able to have it done earlier rather than later, but if this was done, I think, any time prior to the publication of the initial report, it would probably work out. So would it be practical for you to follow up on it next week, Barbara?
Yeah, it would be much more practical for me to follow up on it next week.
Okay, and so
if I get it done sooner than that, then I'll certainly post it.
Okay, great.
Jordan, can I? This is Sheath.
Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
It would probably be useful just to put all the constituency statements together in one document and have that posted again, so that people who are kind of looking at this from the outside can at least see in one place what all the constituency statements say.
Yeah, that's fine. I actually can go ahead and do that. Constituency statement. The only trick is going to be at least one of them was submitted as a PDF, Tom. And I'll need to get a non-PDF version of it to do that.
Do you want me to send it to the list or just to you?
Either, whatever you're comfortable with.
Okay.
And that will actually probably become an attachment to the interim report as well. Okay, so just in terms of just looking at a meeting schedule for the next couple of weeks, do we feel like we have today, and on our current schedule, we would have today and two additional meetings to work out all the policy details prior to the submission of the initial report? Do people feel like that is enough sort of conversation time in order to get this done? Based on, I mean, I think we're pretty far apart right now as part of the problem.
I don't know if it's enough or not, but at this point I could only do one call next week. I'm in Europe all week at a series of government meetings. I can do the call on Monday. At the time, this time would be a problem for me at other times.
Okay, so we may just run into practicality issues if we thought it might be useful to expand the number of meetings.
This is Kathy. My schedule is normally pretty tight, but I've cleared some time because I thought that we might need some extra time. So can I throw out Friday at the same time as a possibility? Because I think we probably do need a few more discussions.
I won't be wrong on Friday as well.
What? Let me just... So Marilyn, you're going to be out of the country next week, is that correct?
Yeah, and it's 5 p.m. in Europe, I think, right, at this time, at 11?
It's 5:15, yes.
So I can do a short call on Monday. I can make Monday's call. Later in the week, I can't make a call at this time.
Okay.
How about this week, Marilyn, before you leave for Europe?
I'll work in another call this week.
Cool.
Yeah, that may make sense, I think, is to add another. I mean, I think today we can probably get through some initial dialogue on the statements, but the real big push we might be able to start later this week. So if Tom's not available on Friday, what about, do people have some time on Thursday, perhaps? Maybe the same time on Thursday? Let's throw that out.
On Thursday either, so...
Sorry, I didn't hear that, Tom.
I'm traveling.
Oh, you'll be traveling this time?
It's on Friday, unfortunately. So every day would be fine from Tuesday and Wednesday, but not in the last 2 days in a week.
How about Wednesday, Jordan?
Yeah, okay, Wednesday at this time?
No, Wednesday at this time there's another... I mean, you guys can meet, you just won't have me. There's another...
Okay.
Well, Wednesday, the task force is 1 hour earlier, so they might be finished at quarter past five.
That's
I'm talking
true,
now
maybe.
European time, yes. So if we made it, say, for the Americans at 11:30.
You guys could start the call, and I'll just join when the other call finishes.
Marilyn, do you have something to...
Hold on, I just got to open my calendar here.
Okay.
So we're talking... tell me what time again, Glenn?
It would be 5:30, I'm proposing, in Europe. 5:30 on Wednesday.
Or 11...
Or 11:30 in the States, yes.
I could do 11:15 for an hour. But I have a 12 o'clock lunch, so the earlier we start, you know, if we could start at 11 or 11:15, I can spend an hour on it.
Wednesday 11 is out for me.
Yeah, this is a difficulty in adding additional meetings.
How about earlier in the morning at 9:30?
I can do 9:30. I can do 10, 9:30.
9:30.
I can't do 9:30.
So, Steve, you said you can't do that?
I cannot. I can pretty much any time after 10.
What about at 10?
I can try. Depends how...
10?
How back up there at the
10. Does that work for you, Maggie?
It does.
Okay, you'll just have to do it without Barbara, that's all.
Okay, we'll take
10,
care of that.
Yes, we'll make it 4 o'clock in Europe, Maryland.
Well, if it's this week, I'm still in the States.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, yes, sorry.
Okay, so let's add that additional meeting. 10 o'clock Eastern time, 4 o'clock in Europe on Wednesday,
the 21st.
Yep.
Will it be the same bridge?
Yeah, I think
I'll try and organize it. I'm not so sure because with two calls on one day, sometimes they don't give the same bridge.
I am.
Okay, well, we'll look for details.
But I'll send you the information. I'll do it today.
Okay, thanks, Glenn. Okay, so we will hope that one additional meeting, that will give us 3 substantive meetings to discuss, and if necessary, we may see there's additional work needed. I'm hoping that will give us enough time, especially if we can kick off some policy dialogue today. Anyone else have thoughts on the schedule or process at this point?
So we'll have Wednesday, and then we'll have the following Monday, and then we'll have the following Monday. Is that right?
Yes.
Which means that we'll need to do a fair amount of work online probably.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, if we're finding that we're not, we'll have to monitor this pretty closely, and we may try to see if we can't cram another meeting in there. But at this point, that seems like the most practical schedule.
Yep.
But yes, a lot of online work will be required with this. Okay, so let's jump to the last topic of the day, which is to kick off some of this policy dialogue. I have just barely got done reading all the constituency statements that we've seen so far. I don't know if everyone else has had the opportunity to do that yet. But there's certain points on which I think there's no points on which I think there's 100% universal agreement, unfortunately. There's certain points that are relatively more contentious, and certain points which seem to be relatively less contentious. But just an example of relatively more contentious, the non-commercials and the ALAC have a view about the data fields that need to be collected that is essentially diametrically opposed to the view held by the IPC, the BCs, and the ISPs, with the registrars not really weighing in on that particular point, at least from the perspective of the statement. So that seems like a relatively more complicated issue to get resolved. The one notion that's been raised, and I think that there's relatively strong support for, with the exception of the IPC is the notion of limiting access to port 43 in some way, although there's no discussion of mechanisms, and really it's not our job to talk about mechanisms, but both the ISPs and the BCs expressed support for the idea of limiting access to the data to, and I don't know what that means exactly, but
from
maybe rate limiting or something like that.
Yeah, if I can come in, this is Wendy. Since I've been participating in the Task Force 1 that's been considering bulk access, our discussion of limiting port 43 has really been only either letting registrars rate limit when it becomes a burden on their machines, or limiting as part of a general a broader scheme that's tied into what this task force does with limiting access overall.
Yeah, sure. Well, I guess my point is, sorry, is that you, Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve.
Yeah.
Again, this is there's a rather extensive submission from IPC on exactly that question, but it's sent to Task Force 1, which I think is the...
Right, yeah, and I think it's not our job to decide whether or not whether or not things like rate limiting and the mechanism by which limiting would occur is definitely not within the purview of this task force. That would be squarely within Task Force 1's charter, I think. But whether or not the
we've also seen fairly strong statements on Task Force 1 that limitations on Part 43 are not an answer to any of the privacy concerns over the data submitted.
Sure. So, I was just raising that was a thread that, you know, there seems to be at least, you know, like I said, some support for that, and there's a broad, many of the constituency statements seem to raise the idea of tiered access. I think both the ISPs and the BC seem to come out neither in necessarily in favor or necessarily opposed, and they want to see more information about such approaches. Would that be a fair statement, Maggie and Marilyn?
It is for the ISPs, yes.
Just stated again, I think stated again that we are open to...
Right, that it's neither, that you're neither, you don't come out necessarily in favor of it, but you're not necessarily opposed to it at this point either. You want to see more information prior to that. I mean, the ISPs specifically say they want more information. The BC constituency statement just says that it's been raised and doesn't really come to a conclusion on it.
We would need more, but it's fair to say we think there would have to be more information.
Right.
And although we did not go into it, I think the registry... the questions that we would have.
We missed, I think, at least I didn't miss a big chunk of what you said between...
There are a number of questions that would need to be answered.
Sure, understood, yeah. So I think, it sounds like the BC and the ISP position are relatively similar on tiered access, which is that you want to see more information about the approach, whereas the non-commercials, the registrars, and the ALAC seem to support a tiered access, although the non-commercials maybe...
This is David.
Yep.
I'll jump in. The registry constituency, I'm reasonably sure, will support tiered access. Our view is that we only need a limited amount of information, and in general, the idea of having anything beyond generally available to the public. Exceptions could be made for the tiered access.
Interesting. Okay.
Jordan, for non-commercial, I would put us down as very, very, very concerned about tiered access.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to... So the idea is non-commercial wants there to be... This data doesn't exist anywhere much. So it doesn't matter whether it's limited, who can see it or not. You just don't want to collect it or display it. Is that correct?
Well, that for the purposes of the who is. The collection, right, we don't want it collected or published, or that the registrant should have much more control of that data. But so if they opt out, they've opted out. Whether the registrar is collecting it for other purposes, for business purposes, is a different issue.
Sure. Okay.
Jordan, picking up on that point, it's not addressed in the IPC statement because it's not clear which, if any, of the questions that this task force was asked to address, you know, goes to tiered access. I think based on what Kathy just said, the third question, which deals with basically opting out of public access, I think she's suggesting that should be kind of all or nothing. Either you're in the who is for public access or you're not. But that was the reason why it's not addressed by the task force, the IPC statement, because that question was really asked.
Steve, I'm missing some of what you're saying. I apologize.
Yeah, you're a bit quiet, Steve, so if you could just speak up
a
little bit.
I was just saying that in line with what Kathy just said, the third question that's addressed to this task force just asks, what are the circumstances, if any, under which people should be able to opt out of who is altogether? And I'm paraphrasing. So it doesn't really raise the question of tiered access, in which the data on some registrants would be available to some people but not to others. That's the reason why it's not discussed in the IPC submission. But I think we would probably be in a similar place to what Maggie and Marilyn have described in terms of discussing.
Okay, and that is that you're not fundamentally opposed to it, but you want to see more information before you're comfortable with it.
Yeah, I think there would be a lot of questions to be answered about it.
But we were clear, I think, Jordan, that we believe that all data elements must be collected and should be accurate, regardless.
Right. No, I think that's correct. I think all of the ISPs, the BC and the IPC, were clear that they believe that the current set of data should be collected, that none of those fields should be removed. Whereas some of the other, the ALAC and the non-commercials indicated that they thought that there was a far fewer fields ought to be collected on a mandatory basis. So I agree, that's an area where there is well-defined difference of opinion between various constituencies. Let me do this in order to encourage, make sure that we're all understanding where we're coming from. We could approach this dialogue from one of two perspectives. One is that we could open up each of the questions that we've been posed as a task force and simply have some initial dialogue on each of them. And secondly is that we could start with just a brief description of each constituency's statements, especially if everyone hasn't yet had the opportunity to take a look at those. Do people think that second approach will be helpful right now?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the second approach.
Oh, just to start off by having the various constituency representatives just give a brief, maybe 2-minute overview of their constituency's position, especially for people that may not have had an opportunity to read all of them at this point. Because I know that the registrars in particular sent out the list just today. But if everyone's already read it, that doesn't...
No, I think that's a good idea, actually.
Okay, so why don't we just briefly do that and try to, you know, keep the discussions relatively short, but I think it will be helpful at least to get an understanding of where all the constituencies stand in case there are areas where there is more agreement than I'm seeing right now. So I'm going to do it in the order that people joined the call today. So I think...
I know I joined last, be popping off first, probably.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I'll do it in reverse order then, Marilyn. So why don't... do you want to start with BC?
Sure. First of all, the BC submitted a consolidated document, and we based it on principles that we have had for some time and have been working on. So that information is included in the document that we provided to all the task forces. And then we broke out input specific to each task force. You want me to just cover the two contributions?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. While we acknowledge that there have been privacy questions raised, we still feel the complete understanding of where the privacy concerns are on the part of clients has not been thoroughly understood. And so the work done by this task force and by council an important step in trying to complete analysis of what is the existing position that government is in. We also believe that registrants should be made aware, they should be given clear and unambiguous notice at the time that they register about the fact that this data is to the public. We have heard discussions about the segregation of registrants into different categories, such as individuals or corporations, and we think that there it's very difficult to figure out, first of all, what the category is, and then to validate that someone's in that category. We have an interest in further exploring what two-tier access to the data would look like, but we think there's undoubtedly a significant amount of cost associated with that. So we would propose that the task forces, all three of them, and council get brought up to date on where CRISP is and what risk, if implemented, in providing additional capabilities that might help address the concept, perhaps, of gathering, not displaying, all data. We also believe that there are that offer anonymity to registrants, and that registrants could be offered in about the at the time that they register, if they choose data.
Marilyn, I'm missing every other word. Sorry, this is Kathy.
Sorry.
Well, could you do the start the last point again?
There's services that offer anonymity to registrants, and we think that registrants could be given information about such services at the time that they register. We believe that all data elements are needed. We are, and we believe that all data elements should be displayed, or at a minimum, if not all elements displayed, because there's a move to two-tier access, then the elements should be available via an easy-to-use and validated process. So that may require some kind of process of registering who is users or identifying who is users in order to determine who would be an authenticated user. I think I've pretty much covered the key points.
Great. Thanks, Marilyn. Does anyone actually...
Oh, I just make one other point that we've made a general statement that we, and I made the statement about who is, but I just make one other point. We think that more fact-based research is needed than exists today to help to guide policy development.
Great. Okay, Maggie, just want to... give us a brief synopsis of the ISP position.
Sure. We also consolidated documents. I guess what would be relevant, well, I'll start in the beginning. There's a portion that is relevant to all of them. And it simply itemizes the main uses for the ISP's use of WHOIS data. And that is briefly to research domain registrants who could vicariously cause liability for us. ISPs are sometimes held liable for the content that crosses our networks. Detecting and preventing sources of security attacks on our networks and servers, identifying sources of fraud, spam, and denial of service attacks, and for technical support of our operations for our network administrators. Those are the general uses for ISPs. Jumping down to the Task Force 2 section, we noted and agreed with the fact that there are very real and legitimate privacy concerns about the type of data, but we indicated that the laws of every country or regions around the world could be satisfied with very conspicuous and highlighted notice as to different uses of data, and that would help alleviate some of the privacy concerns, and this would be at the time of registration. We spoke a little bit about the assertions that the current display of WHOIS data may not be legal or proper, but we further noted that in the responses from the CCTLDs who provided them, they all indicated that they work closely with their country's data protection authorities and that they are all in compliance with the laws when they display WHOIS data. We proposed that all of the elements continue to be collected and displayed. Again, the concept of a very full and more robust disclosure be provided regarding the various uses at the point of registration. Anonymous GTLD registration continue to be made allowed, and further awareness about that may be increased to help alleviate, again, some of the privacy concerns for those who have legitimate free speech or political concerns. And then we stated a position about the tiered access, which, similar to what Jordan described earlier, is that we essentially support it as a matter of principle. We're not opposed to it, but we do have very serious cost enforcement and kind of practical implementation concerns with the concept. So we need to see more information and a more viable assessment and proposal about it before we can really comment further or to, again, say whether we support or cannot.
Great. Thanks, Maggie. Let's go to the non-commercial.
Okay. We submitted our statement late Friday, and we also started with a set of principles. One is the issue of what is the purpose of a database. It's a fundamental concept with countries that have comprehensive data protection laws. And we submit that the purpose of the WHO is identification of domain name holders for purposes of solving technical and operational problems. This is kind of the historic purpose. The purpose is not for a number of the secondary law enforcement and self-policing interests that have been kind of created as a secondary use of all this data being public. Our second principle is that we fully believe that ICANN, on its own or through the terms of its contracts, should not be creating a database whose purposes serve more than the purposes of ICANN itself, more than the technical and operational security and stability of the domain name system. We talked about, as a principle, the national privacy laws that were created based on human rights concerns coming out of World War II, and that this is, that we've heard very clearly comments from the European Commission, from the Article 29 Data Protection Working Group, and then from beyond Europe, even the International Working Group on Data Protection and Telecommunications, which is kind of an international group of data protection commissioners. And they're very concerned. We've heard loudly their opposition to some of these WHOIS data elements. And something that's not in the comments, but let me add that a clear enough waiver notice isn't enough. That's, I think, something we derive from the EU data protection laws, is you can't just tell people, you can't just tell European citizens, as I understand it, that, their data that's collected for, say, financial reasons or health reasons in Europe, that they have to sign away all their rights to it because it's going to another country. That's what I understand the concept of safe harbor and adequate safeguards are. Europe itself has to, the data protection commissioners, have to judge that the place where it's going has enough data protection safeguards to protect the principles and rights of the European citizen. So I've got great concerns about this idea that you just give people enough information and they can waive all their rights. I don't think so. We're concerned about placing registrars and registries in the untenable position of having to either comply with the ICANN contract or comply with their national laws. We think they should be able to do both, and point out that a number of the CCTLDs did respond to our survey, that they are working with their national data protection commissioners and agencies, but that in doing so they have changed what information is available to the public, and in some cases collected. But they've changed it. They're not providing all this private information. In many cases they've cut back dramatically, particularly in the last few years. And we're concerned about the proxy services, and I'll get to that in a second. So what we've recommended as a non-commercial constituency is that we just take out the registrant administrative contact information, particularly for small organizations, families, individuals. This information is kind of identifying the person and where they live and what their phone number is. We don't think it should be collected at all, and that the registrar accreditation agreement should be revised to take out that collection requirement. We think that if it is collected, it shouldn't be published, that people should be given the choice of what's published, and that, the registrar accreditation agreement should be revised accordingly. And on the proxies, we're very concerned that that the proxies, by virtue of requirements in the ICANN contract, are revealing the identity, the name, address, phone number of domain name holders for reasons far short of due process. Basically, their agreements with the registrants say, we will hand over information even if we're threatened. If someone comes in and says, we want this information and, we're threatening you and we're threatening them, they can hand over the information. That's not quite due process protection. So we'd like to see the ICANN contract revised so that registrars acting as proxies do not have to accept liability for harm caused by the wrongful use of the domain name. We don't think that they should be liable at all. And that's it.
Great. Thanks, Kathy. Let's jump to Steve.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. In the IPC constituency statement, we did not submit a unified statement for all three task forces. But with regard to Task Force 2, it's organized based on the three questions that the task force was asked by the council to address. First one deals with informing registrants about what information is made available and what options they have to restrict that. And our recommendations are that ICANN should incorporate compliance with this obligation in their overall registrar compliance program, which is an element of their MOU obligation, that it should issue an advisory reminding registrars of the importance of this. Even registrars, since we got a few responses from registrars who said, in our country, we're not required to obtain the consent of the registrant. We think it's important that they obtain that consent even as a contractual matter. We would encourage the registrars to develop some best practices, and we'd be glad to participate in an effort to do so with regard to notifying and obtaining consent from registrants. The second question had to do with data elements. We, based on the survey that we had done of our participants in the ITC, we recommend that none of the data elements be removed. We suggested a few data elements that ought to be considered for inclusion. One of them has to do with the last verification of registrant contact information. This was the suggestion of the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, and it's not clear whether that falls within Task Force 2 or Task Force 3, but in any case, we've included it in our submission. And finally, on the question of domain name holders opting out of WHOIS, in general, we do not support that that concept. We do think it would make sense to do some further work on the proxy registration services that are currently allowed under the agreement, and we specify some factual questions that we think could useful to try to answer about those services. And then we would also recommend some further research on the practice in some of the CCTLDs of allowing registrants on a case-by-case basis on, when they show special circumstances to opt out of public access to WHOIS data. That we should look at whether or how that could be a similar system could be adopted for the GTLD. So that's the quick summary of the IPC submission.
Thanks, Steve. Okay, Wendy, do you want to give us
sure.
an ALAC?
Sure, Bruce. I can go briefly because a lot of our concerns have already been raised, but non-commercial. And basically, we agree that the WHOIS information collected should be reduced based on both privacy and free speech considerations, and that the WHOIS information collected should be limited to the technical information necessary to resolve the domain name and
perhaps to reach a technical contact, and that registrants could perhaps have the opportunity to opt into provision of additional data. We've heard that some businesses might want a place where they could list, put more information about who they were to for prospective customers, but that nobody should be required to include information with registrant name or contact information or administrative name and contact information. We think that's important, both as a matter of privacy law. In many European countries, that is something that the data protection laws are protections for citizens, but they can't waive based on some sort of form notice or even interactive notice, and that they're not from, those collecting data aren't permitted to require citizens to give up information for unrelated purposes. And as a matter at least of U.S.-based free speech law, there are protections for anonymous speech, and when a domain name is an important vehicle by which people can speak, they should be entitled to speak anonymously using that, just as they can through a broadsheet distributed on the street corner. So our ideal solution is to reduce the amount of data that's required. If that a second order solution might be the tiered access, where there's a reciprocal disclosure. If sensitive data is disclosed to a requester, that requester has to make has to authenticate and give his purpose, and that would be reported back to the registrant when his data was accessed. And finally, we don't think that proxies are satisfactory for similar reasons to what Kathy has already said. In practice, they don't work because of the way ICANN's contract assign liability. So if proxies were looked at as a serious solution to the anonymity and privacy issues, the contract would have to make clear that there was no liability to a registrar for registering an anonymous domain name that was subsequently misused. The remedy is to shut down the domain name, but not to reveal the user's identity.
Okay, thanks, Wendy. And last but not least, Tom?
Okay. I guess registrars started thinking about the whole voice issue in regard of their contract, because they are one of the two or three contracting parties with ICANN. And the general idea we have is that the contracts we have are like a fractal building in some way, but it's not based on international treaty, but it's just like, how to say that? The general feeling is that it should not supersede local laws, whatever they are. For example, if there might be a privacy law as well, which I have no idea of, that there might be one or not, that the ICANN contract should not force on Israel registrar to breach local law. So that is one of the main statements we make in our statement, that it should not breach, or that the registrar should not be in breach. The other thing we talk about is about fairness in some way, but we think that it's a good idea to show certain amount of data about a domain registrant on the hook, like in the future, but that it's a fair thing for the data user who is using that data to reveal who he is and what he's using the data for. So that would be the tiered access approach in some way. So that's, we make pretty clear what we think should be and the three level of data which should be there. But that's all in the statement, so I'm sorry. That's it.
Okay, thanks, Tom. And David, can you just help us? Is there any fundamental concepts or other principles that you think that the registries are likely to conclude as part of the registry statement, just to give us some perspective on you know, whether there's likely to be significant, you know, variance or agreement from the registries with some of these other statements? You still there, David?
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you repeat that?
Yeah. I was just wondering, even though the registry statement isn't complete yet, do you know, are there some, have you guys gotten to the point yet that you have some core principles in place?
I'd say we're in agreement with the non-commercial statement. There might be some difference, but so far the discussion has made me in general agreement.
Right, so it sounds like the registries will likely favor a relatively narrow set of data to be collected as part of the registration process?
That's correct. Just the data that is needed for operation.
Okay. Well, so that didn't convince me that we were so much closer together than I originally thought, so I think we still have a lot of work ahead of us. So there were a number of issues that I heard come up, you know, as common threads, I guess, in various of the constituency statements or descriptions thereof, and I think these might help frame some of our conversation. I'm not sure if we have a huge amount of time to try to tackle them all right now, but let me just throw out a few sort of areas of conversation maybe for us to think about and start to tackle on the list. But those are the types of the proxy services used for anonymization right now. And actually, well, I may jump back to this. The second is the notion of tiered access. The third is, you know, which data fields ought to be collected and or displayed with requirement to the ICANN contract. The fourth is whether or not there's some sort of useful distinction between types of registrants, commercial versus non-commercial or some other, and whether it's different information ought to be gathered. And the last concept that was raised is the notion of allowing some sort of opt-out on a case-by-case basis raised by the IPCs, actually. And I think there it was more an indication that we want more research than seriously proposing it as a valid alternative at this point. Is that correct, Steve?
Yeah, our recommendation is that that be looked into further and see whether it's could be applicable to GTLD.
Right, okay. So I think those are the, I guess, broad areas where there seems to be common threads of discussion. That last
Jordan, do you have that list written in front of you? That was a good list.
I will I'll email it out.
Jordan, what about the first question that this task force was asking the press?
You mean within the terms of reference?
Right, the one that was supported by more of the constituents.
Oh, no, that's a good point, actually. That was a common thread as well, which was what disclosures and consent ought to be obtained.
Right.
That's an excellent point, Steve. Does anyone else notice other threads or sort of points that came coming up over and over again?
Well, there's the other thing about the local legislation overriding that by the ICANN contract that mentioned, as far as I know, by the non-consult as well as the ALEC, as well as the registrars. I'm pretty sure that the registries will include that in their statement as well.
Right, that's true. And actually, the ISPs also mentioned it, but from a different perspective, I guess. Okay, so that's helpful, Tom.
And maybe the purpose of the who is?
Purpose of
the
who is? Now, that is a very philosophical question.
That's
somewhat reluctant. I mean, I can understand how that frames the conversation, but to a certain extent, Kathy, you're asking more the philosophical question of what who is ought to be for as opposed to what it is being used for. Is that correct? Because I think we have from our data analysis and various other phases, we sort of see what people are using it for. Whether or not that's the purpose, I guess, is a separate line of conversation.
Can you just stick in the list with a question mark?
Sure.
It is a database on making the information public. And as I understand it, under European law, we have to ask that question. Whether we want to define it.
Sure. Okay, so I'll email those questions to the list, and I think it may be productive prior to Wednesday's meeting to start having some dialogue about these points. But one thing that immediately struck me was the almost universality of the notion of the proxy services at least being mentioned. And I want to just raise a question for us to think about or maybe discuss briefly along those lines, which is if the ALAC and the non-commercials have expressed that they're not really comfortable with the services as they stand because they don't provide adequate privacy protection to the registrant. And it sounds like most of the other constituencies seem, well, the registrars don't take a position on it, I don't think, although I imagine they're in favor of it since they do it today. the BC, the ISPs, and the IPC all seem to indicate that they're comfortable with such services. So I guess the question that I'd raise here would be, would the ISPs, the IPC, and the business constituency continue to be comfortable with such services if the type of protections that the non-commercial and the ALAC expressed, you know, rejiggering the ICANN contract in order to provide a greater liability shield to registrars were in place?
Jordan, in the IPC, the IPC doesn't say that whether we're comfortable with this or not. We ask five questions that we need to find out more about how these proxy registration services operate. And perhaps if we had more data on it, we would be in a better position to know whether they're working the right way, the wrong way, and whether the types of changes that the non-commercials and ALAC are talking about would make sense. But just throw that in, that in fact, we don't really have very much information about these services.
Sure, and you don't, the actually, I don't see your questions. Very second, let me... okay, well, that's good to know. Maggie or Marilyn, do you have any thoughts on the question I posed?
Well, I mean, I'd be glad to go over those questions if you want.
Yeah, sure. Steve, what are your questions?
Yeah, we suggest that there should be more research on five things. First, the rate of uptake of these services and how consumers are responding to them. Secondly, what steps are being taken to ensure that the registrar actually collects accurate data, even if they don't display it to the proxy system. Third is this question that's been raised by several others, which is what are the circumstances under which that information is disclosed? In other words, in terms of the current contract, how do they interpret reasonable evidence of actionable harm, which is the standard in the current contract? Fourth, how are the registrants notified when the data is released? And finally, whether these services are scalable. I mean, in part, that may be answered by the first question. If only a few people are using these services now, then maybe there's an issue about whether they could be used in a more widespread fashion. So those are the five questions that we think would be useful to know more about for proxy services, because that could shed some light on whether the contract needs to be changed in that area.
Right. Well, I guess part of the conflict we'll see right now is that your third question, what are the circumstances under which they're disclosed? What ALAC and non-commercials are saying is that right now the circumstance. Well, the circumstances in the status quo don't really, you know, make them happy. So, you know, under their proposal, you'd see a different set of circumstances under which they were disclosed.
Yeah, and that would be worth looking at, certainly. There's also the question of what do we know about the circumstances under which they are disclosed now. I think there was one anecdote given in one of the submissions, and you know, we could certainly talk about that particular case, but I think it's more, maybe more useful if we could find out how often has this occurred and under what circumstances, what practices do the operators of these services follow in deciding whether or not to release the actual contact information.
Yeah, and that does also tie into your fourth question as well. Tom, do you by chance have any perspective on any of these questions? Do you know generally what registrar practices are? Are these generally considered to be sort of secret things that aren't made public as part of the general discussion within the community?
Well, we haven't really actually talked about proxy services because only a few of us really provide them, but the general feeling I get, especially from the non-registrars, that proxy services is not a final solution that we would envisage for the future.
And why is that, Tom?
Well, because there's a general feeling that the possible, maybe under certain legislation. So I could imagine that just pushing people in a paid servers might not be possible, for example, in Germany.
Right. So the issue there is perhaps the nature that the privacy protection is only gained when you pay a fee. Is that part of the problem?
That's correct.
Okay.
It all comes down to it's in some country thing that it's a right you have and not a service you have to pay money for.
Right. Well, that's more an issue of the economics of providing the registration service. And I mean, at some point, the difference between these services and a tiered access start to break down in that the proxy service provides one view to the public and another view to people that essentially are unmask the data, right? So part of the question is, you know, is that provided as an additional service? Is it provided as, you know, something that everyone can opt into? Is there more than one tier? I mean, there are distinctions between the two, but at some point, the tiered access and the proxy services start to look somewhat similar, especially if you offered a proxy service to everyone sort of free of charge or something like that.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's some comparison, but we are more comfortable with a tiered access, if you want to call it that way. I mean, you still can offer some kind of a proxy service, which is totally anonymous to someone, but still having the tiers.
Sure. Okay, well, I think, you know, I will, you know, like I said, send out the list of topic areas that I've discussed, and I would imagine on the next, I'll identify a couple of them that I think would be particularly helpful to start to investigate on the next call. Unless anyone else has particular topics they wanted to discuss, you know, to kick off the policy discussion today, I think it would be helpful for us to make sure that we've all read the other contributions and start to think about some of these topic areas and where we might be able to move towards creative solutions where there's some common ground available as opposed to some places where there seems to be wide disparities in terms of the views of various constituencies and really in terms of blocks of various constituencies.
Jordan, can I just add one thing?
Sure.
I just wanted to clarify a point, or maybe I'm asking a question, really, because both Kathy and then I think Wendy and David both confirmed that by giving notice, you can't require people to somehow waive their rights. And that, I just want to clarify that was never stated in the ISP statement, and I don't remember reading it in any other statements. So I would love to kind of be pointed in the direction of where or which constituency made that statement, and if not, to clarify that that was not, in fact, what we said or the position that, as far as I know, anyone advocates.
Wait. Maggie, this is Kathy. Different statements did talk about national law, right?
Yeah, and the statement is basically that under the European regime, most of the member states require that the data be only used for the purposes that it's collected. So by providing those purposes up front, then that is the way that the law requires for you to, or the law allows for you to comply. But it does not allow, and no one that I'm aware of, and certainly not the ISPs, have said that by providing that notice, you are then allowing the people's rights to be completely waived.
Well, if you put on that the purpose is a directory, a public directory, I do believe there is, say, a right to opt out of directories under the EU law and as implemented by countries. So I'm not sure you can waive that right. I think you have a right to opt out of directories.
But a directory that is made publicly available is different from one where there is a legitimate civil or criminal need to access. Those are two different things. I don't think anyone is advocating for who is to be completely set out to be displayed everywhere and accessed by everyone and bulk access. I mean, I think we've all agreed, or as far as I know, we've all agreed that the marketing uses of who has data be limited or restricted and not allowed. So that essentially takes it out from a public directory where everyone can access for any purpose. That's not really part of the discussion anymore based on the original Who Is Task Force work.
It sounds like the question of the purpose of the Who Is database comes front and center.
Well, yes and no, but I do agree with Jordan that just stating it in such a broad general way is more philosophical issue, which we probably won't be able to answer, and it's probably a waste of our time to try to reach consensus on. But I do reject, well, I'll say the ISPs did reject in our statement the fact that the notion that has been stated before that there is only one legitimate purpose for the Who Is data, and that's only for technical administrative purposes.
But if we're going to advocate consent, then, I mean, and I throw this out as a general question, do we need to talk about what consent were, I mean, if the idea is to keep these data fields subject to consent, then don't we have to go to the next place which says consent for what?
Consent for the various ways in which it can be used, not consent or agreement on what the whole purpose of Who Is was originally when you had a dozen websites and internet that consisted of 100 or so researchers and scientists.
Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, this, I think, the exercise is somewhat self-defining. The purpose and what you're consenting to, we're starting to help to try to define, you know, we know essentially today what you end up consenting to is that your information is made publicly available to anyone that has access to a web browser or Who Is client. Part of the purpose of this exercise is to perhaps change that definition to a certain extent. And I think, you know, I think, Kathy, we may find it somewhat useful to talk about the purpose of Who Is, but I would be surprised, I guess, if that was a it's such a broad philosophical question and a place where I think we're unlikely to get a strong amount of consensus on it. But
I think it's a critical element of the first question.
Of the first?
Of the first question assigned to the task force.
Well, if we make it clear to registrants what their information is going to be used for, regardless of what the theoretical purpose of that is, does it end up mattering?
Then you've done it. I mean, then you've...
Right, so I guess I'm saying we can back into that definition as opposed to necessarily defining it up front.
I'm missing the difference, but as long as we get to it. And again, I think it's part of what you're consenting to, which seems like part of question one. I don't think we can assume that. I think national law asks us to ask that question directly and to answer it. And if we want to answer it based on historical use or what, but I think we have to answer it.
Sure. Okay. Well, I would... we're certainly not going to answer it today. So let me table that discussion at least temporarily and see if there's any other topics that people want to try to resolve today or encourage some dialogue on today. I know we're starting to run out of time.
Jordan?
Yeah, Tom?
It was mentioned by several constituencies like the IPC that they would have to need more data about the tiered access model. So, and they would have questions to be asked. And I really would like to know which questions we would be talking about. So it would be great help for all of us, I guess, if, or the three constituencies who raised doubts, more or less, that they could provide us with a list of the questions they have. People who like that idea might be able to answer.
Yeah, that actually is a great point, Tom. That I think that would be useful. And I think, you know, to the extent the registrars have actually proposed something of a model, tiered access model, it would be probably instructive to know what questions beyond, you know, what data elements would be present would help the ISPs, the BC, and the to what extent it makes sense that the IPC as well to make decisions about this. So Maggie or David, Steve, do you have thoughts on that?
My thoughts are just simply that if there is a model, I would love to see it, and I'll make sure it's shared with the constituency and bring back any thoughts that I get from the constituency. That was really our main question, was not, I guess we hadn't seen a model where we could really discuss and find what we did or did not understand or did or did not agree with, but it was just simply once we have a viable proposal, then we can study it and discuss it and come up with a statement. So if there is that model that we could obtain, that would be great to have. I'll make sure we respond to it.
Sure. Well, the registrar constituency statement contains a model as relates, I think primarily as relates to our work, which is a list of data fields and splits them up into separate sort of use cases and who they might be presented to. It doesn't attempt to answer questions like how access is differentiated, but I think that, you know, in terms of what the actual technological mechanism is, but I think that actually is beyond the scope of this task force in any case.
It would be task force one as far as I know.
Yeah. So I would encourage you to take a look at the registrar's constituency statement in order to, at least purely from the perspective of Task Force 2, to get a look at a model of how the data might be segregated.
Yep, will do.
Steve, do you have any thoughts on, are there specific questions that you think might be useful to help get answered in order to evaluate a tiered access model?
Yeah, I think the most useful thing might be to look at what the registrars have proposed and raise some of the questions there. The question that always arises, of course, is who's in which tier and who decides who shoulders the cost of determining who is in which tier. So that's kind of an overall question. But we'll be glad to take a look now that we have a more or less detailed proposal, or at least a general proposal from the registrars as of this morning. We'll take a look at it.
Okay, great.
Just talking about the cost of this, the general feeling of our constituency that we would shoulder most of the cost of the development and implementation of such a service. I mean, to provide who is right now and fast, and would be the same with a new system.
It's very generous of you.
Too. Even if you don't like it, but we have. Now, because I've heard that cost issue quite a lot of times, and I think if there are some good clients, there it is, just no. There shouldn't be any in using something else.
Sure. So the registrars, in your proposal, you're not looking at this as being any sort of value-added service. This would just be an additional requirement essentially imposed on registrars as part of their ICANN contract?
Absolutely. It would not be a service we would market to anyone. It would be a service everybody could use. It's just a matter of how it could be handled. But it's not a costly service.
Interesting. Well, I think this may be the first time I've ever heard of a constituency proposing a new requirement that would impose additional costs on them.
Well, we just want testament.
No, I think it's a testament to the desire to have this particular approach happen, I guess.
That's true as well.
Okay, anyone else have any? I'm going to wrap this up unless people have additional comments, and we will start to. I'll select a couple of the topic areas for us to start to see if we can't hash out in some more depth on Wednesday. Okay, great. Well, thanks everyone for your time. I think we do probably have the more dialogue we can have online about some of these topics, the better. Just in terms of the limited number of meetings we have, but I do encourage people to begin taking a look online and seeing what we can do there, and otherwise we'll talk with everyone on Wednesday. Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Jordan.
Thanks, Jordan.
Thanks, Jordan. Bye.
Bye.